Alex Coach Mike here, alexcoachmike.com. Premium guys, you are the best. Our special friends at Crossover for sponsoring these podcasts. You guys are the best. Check out this product. I use it. I love it. I highly, highly recommend it. Great day. Got Coach Jake Kuhn. Man, this is an action-packed podcast. You know, his bio reads, he's accomplished more in 5 seasons at RIT than some coaches accomplish in a career. It's probably accurate, man. In 5 years, got an 88-14 record. Since 2011 alone, he's twice been the USILA D3 Coach of the Year. Man, and one of the favorites on our site. You know, we've always talked about defense with him, which is kind of his specialty. In this podcast, we go a totally different direction. Premium guys, you're going to love it. We talk about the practice plan, their high shots on goal, and how they get their philosophy, which may surprise you. The 4v4 skeletons, transition drills, including a neat full field 3v3. The Hopkins drill, which we feature in the article section, ground ball drills. Hey, without further ado, this guy is so, so impressive. Not only in his coaching record, but in his communication style. Man, just kind of guy you'd love to have your kids play for. Without further ado, Coach Kuhn.
Hey. Last Coach Mike here, lastcoachmike.com. Big day in my life, man. I get my third opportunity to get my one-on-one coaching clinic with Coach Jake Kuhn from RIT. Coach, I listened to our last interview from 2013 this morning, and I'm feeling very, very melancholy about all the stuff you taught me that I didn't implement in my practices, and another three or four things on the specifically on the angle play. Although I haven't raced any players, you know, from the way you told us you had done one time. But anyway, I'm looking forward to it. Can't thank you enough, Coach Jake Kuhn, RIT. Thanks for coming on, Coach.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. Hopefully I can add a little something from the last time we spoke.
I'm going to stretch you this time, man. You know, we have covered everything from a pretty detailed dialogue in the first podcast back in 2011 on rise and clears. Spent almost 30 or 40 minutes talking about different drills and concepts, whether they would be capturing the ball with a minute left and you're down or whatever they are on angles last time. Got a couple of questions on the stats and we're ready to go. But to begin with, Coach, you know, you're kind of cagey, you know. I mean, you come off as so soft-spoken, but obviously your success speaks for itself. And last time I started out just talking about the original template, practice template, you know, that we had covered with you the first time. Was kind of a warm-up and stretching and stick work and rides and clears every day and then transition 6v6 and then scrimmaging. And then you snuck in, you know, kind of subtly that you had, in fact, played with the scrimmage time, moving it forward in the practice template. Again, you don't often hear coaches literally use the words keep it fun so the players aren't bored the way we hear from you in a very honest and forthright manner. But on that basic template, rather than sneak something in subtly on me 20 minutes from now, are you still with that template, and are you moving the scrimmages up and down, and can you give us just a second on a basic plan, or is there even a basic plan anymore?
Oh, yeah. Thank you for the compliment, first of all. You know, I think when something's not broken, why try to fix it? So, yeah, we pretty much stick to the same ideas, same philosophy. Although with the scrimmage piece, yeah, we certainly move that around a bit. We've been doing a little bit more situational stuff, meaning we may do 3 shortened, you know, full field games. And we'll, you know, say it's a 10-minute full field game, to start, the beginning of practice. We might, put the white team up by 2 or 3 goals and they have to try to come back and win. And the other team has to try to hold their lead. And then we might play game 2 with the other team up and then maybe game 3 later in practice. And it works out some situational type things. And I think we've been doing a little bit more of that this year anyway. And we've also, tried to do some transition work at the beginning of practice rather than maybe a full field scrimmage. Just, you know, right out of the gate, maybe do some 3v2 short field or, something to get the guys motivated and you know, kind of into practice. Same old, gets boring, and, you know, you don't get the energy out of the guys that you really want. So those are kind of the changes we've made. But for the most part, the template, especially at the beginning of the year, we kind of work through the nuts and bolts of your entire philosophy, I guess, in terms of riding clearing, ground balls, stick work, all that stuff at the beginning, and then work into maybe some 6-on-6 and full field at the end. I think we've kind of morphed, you know, as the year goes on, we kind of morph into what we need.
Yeah, see, so you have moved some things around, man. You're so subtle about this. You say 3v2 short field, you're talking about, you know, the cages into restraining lines and 3v2 with the guys racing back and forth or sideline to sideline or something like that?
Yeah, that's just an example of some of the transition we do. I mean, we do a lot of transition, but that's a good one to kind of get going. It's not, 80, 100, 120 yards back and forth sprints. You know, you kind of, you know, get the guys going slowly, into practice. I mean, it's a fun little drill. It gets competitive. We usually kind of play to 10 or whatever. Sometimes we'll do O versus D, which is always interesting.
Say that again, Coach. I didn't get it.
Sometimes we'll go O versus D in a 3v2 situation. So we'll put the O on one side, the D on the other, and we, you know, back and forth, and we'll go to 10. Sometimes it's, white versus black or colors, you know, but it's allowing the guys to get their stick work going without having to run 150 yards, you know, back and forth, to get some transition work.
And you've got a competitive element in there keeping score right from the beginning, huh?
Yeah, we'll keep score. Yep. The coaches will keep score. You would expect that you'd score on most of your 3v2s, but it's kind of funny. You don't always.
So how do the poles hold up, man? Do they win sometimes?
Hell yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they do all right. You know, they got a little bit of advantage on the defensive side. So, they do all right. And we have some poles that can handle the ball, too. And, you know, they obviously enjoy shooting the ball a little bit. Not the best for the goalies, but that's okay.
Oh, yeah. Now it's okay. When you were in college, it may not have been that
good. Yeah, probably not.
Man, people ask me all the time, like when I'm traveling the country doing coaching clinics, and I don't want to get off the subject. It's kind of interesting. You know, they always ask me, common denominators with coaches and especially is a lot of it is personality driven. You know, the old school coaching versus maybe, I don't even know what word to use. Let me say a little bit more empathetic or a little more transparency. A lot of coaches have with their captains and their players now. But they also asked me about where they came from, you know. And I started looking through the site, man. We have a preponderance of former goalies that are head coaches. You know, I always think about, like, you and Kadelka especially, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So goalies make the best coaches. We agree on that?
I'm sorry?
Goalies make the best coaches. We agree on that?
I do think they have a different perspective on things. You know, you're able to watch the entire field and – I think, you know, you're involved with everything, whether it's rides, clears, 6-on-6D, when the ball's at the other end, you're able to sit back and watch. So you kind of have that bird's eye perspective of the game. So I do think goalies can make good coaches. Yes, I think so.
Oh, nice politically correct answer, Coach. I'm so proud of you. The only other idiosyncrasy is that all former goalies think that they should be the guy that warms up the goalies now.
I do.
All four goalies think they can shoot.
I do think I can shoot, yes.
Although I got to tell you what, I have, when I was coaching at Auburn, we were up playing Liberty and North Carolina State, and that round-robin weekend happened to be held in Lynchburg, you know, where Liberty is. And pretty good program, actually, for club. And spent a day over there, you know, at Lynchburg. And I got to tell you, man, I was impressed watching Kadelka warm guys up.
I believe it. Yeah, I bet he can bring it. I bet he's got a rocket of a shot. It's certainly tedious getting out there and working with the goalies every day, but well worth it. I think I've certainly developed a shot, and I certainly have developed a left hand since college. Shooting on goalies every day, and I think I'd recommend players getting involved somehow, because I do think it makes you a better shooter. I'm not tooting my own horn. I'm just saying in general, I mean, you go out and you try to shoot accurate shots every day and make sure the goalies are thoroughly warmed up, and I do think it helps your shooting immensely.
And you know what? A lot of times it's not your absolutely best attackman you find is a pretty good shooter on warming up, but that's been my experience. When you get to be 58, you realize it's no longer your place, you know?
Yeah, well,
about a year
ago, my goalies have been busting my chops a little bit, telling me that I don't have much longer. But
I got T-shirts older than you, man. it was funny. And I want to get to the interview, but I got to tell you this story. It was like 2 years ago, you know, and I'm coaching against a really, really good friend. Both teams are really pretty solid. And, you know, I usually traveled with one goalie, you know, in summer travel ball. Just, you know, it's hard to sub guys at halftime, and you want to play the guy that's hot or who plays in the championship and all that. And then we get one guy that thinks, you know, has played a little bit of goalie, maybe an attackman or somebody that can get in the cage should the guy get a penalty or whatever, whatever, you know. So anyway, I get a goalie about the third game of the tournament. He gets rocked in the cup, man. Cracks the cup. Guy has to go to the hospital, be checked out. You know, Pole comes in to play goalie. I go out to warm him up. And I'm out eating wings, you know, with the other coach at the game. He goes, man, I have never seen you warm up a goalie in the last 15 years. You know, and I'm laughing. I'm going, I didn't want you to see how bad he really was. That was the reason I warmed him up. You know, I mean, yeah, my shot couldn't break toilet paper anymore. Hey, man, the transition stuff is flying this year. Good year, eh, Coach? I mean, 46.2 shots a game. You know, I think the first time we talked to you was like 38, and then it was like 42 in 2013. But the thing that I want to talk to you about, and I know you don't want to talk about offense, and that's Coach Wilkinson, blah, blah, blah. Enough of that crap. The thing that amazes me, though, is with 46 shots a game, the shots on goal percentage is .698. Mm-hmm. You know, are you doing something in practice? Is there a focus on the shooting drills or something you're doing in terms of where you're encouraging them to shoot on the field, depending on the individual player, that's giving you such a commendable shots on goal percentage, even with a high volume of shots, Coach?
You know what?
You didn't think
no.
I did that much research for this interview, did you? I'm ready for you, man.
No, to answer your question.
Oh, man, you're killing me.
Well, I'll be honest. I think it's more of a philosophy. I think we do just the opposite. We let the guys shoot to their strengths. You know, I mean, you start trying to tell people where to shoot on a goalie, and you start preaching one particular way to shoot a ball, I think you're only hurting your kids, to be honest with you. I think that certain kids have been shooting a certain way their entire life, and they're good at it. So why would we tell them to shoot a different way? You know, in practice, we certainly want them to develop shots from different spots. You know, I mean, if you're an underhand shooter, you know, we want you to practice shooting overhand so you can change things up if need be. But, you know, we're not shooting 30 minutes a day. You know, we do 10 minutes of shooting. We do a ton of transition, so guys are getting a lot of shooting right in the transition drills. But we're not preaching, you know, if we go into a scout, you know, when we do our scout into a game here, we're not necessarily drawing out, listen, you have to shoot high to low on this kid. You know, we might, you know, tell the scout that we think that's a good spot to shoot. And we might say, you know, try to stay away from six side high, but really just do your thing. You know, if you see open net, shoot for open net. So maybe it's just a different philosophy, and I think the guys are comfortable with that. And I think Coach Wilkins is certainly putting us in positions to shoot high percentage shots versus, you know, just throwing the ball into the cage.
Well, yeah, man, whenever I see you play, 60% of the shots are from the backside pipe because of the way you move the ball anyway.
Yeah, a lot of it comes from the passing ability. I mean, we do a lot of stick work, too. So, you know, if you can pass the ball, you know, quickly and crisply, you know, then you're going to end up with layups and high percentage opportunities. So, and it's kind of a combination of things, I guess.
Well, and when I was talking about where you shoot, I was talking about more where the position on the field is. You know, we actually, you know, have encouraged coaches to modify their shooting drills to their players. you know. Uh-huh. And believe it or not, Coach, it came from dialogue with guys like you, although you always dodge the conversation on man up, too. You know, if you've got guys that aren't great carriers, let's say you got a left-hand finisher, but he can't carry, you know, then run a couple of shooting drills where you're going, like, up and over or getting him the ball where he's going to post up and shoot.
Right.
You know, as opposed to him doing a driving shooting drill or even coming around a pick if he's not a peer. So, yeah, my dialogue there was identifying where players' strengths are in terms of where they're accurate shooting on the field, you know.
Yes, sir.
And adjusting to their style of play, too.
Yeah, and adjusting the shooting drills to kind of fit your offensive style. You know, I think it's certainly important that you, you know, just because a guy's not a carrier per se, I think he should still be dodging and shooting, you know, shooting on the run and developing that. But, yes, I mean, you know, setting up your shooting drills, you know, if you're a sweeping team, you know, you got to set up some sweep drills to shoot. You know, if you're a room and time, you need some room and time. So, you know, just kind of mimicking kind of your offensive style, you know, even if it's in tight shots. I mean, I think it's important to, you know, practice those as well.
Yeah, and I think the other thing we're a huge proponent of on the site, and I'd love to get your feedback, is, you know, years ago when I was coaching Copperheads, we were so blessed. We had good players. We ended up winning the Dick's National Championship, you know. But at the end of the day, I was getting interviewed, you know, on Inside Lacrosse TV or something afterwards about a team from Georgia winning this national championship and blah, blah, blah. And the guy said, man, you guys move the ball so well. You know, how often do you practice and how do you get the guys to run all those plays? You know, and my team was behind me in the interview and I started laughing and they all cracked up laughing because I don't think we had but three plays, you know, but we emulated our offensive philosophy and our shooting drills. So in the game, we were basically running our shooting drills, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah. It does make sense.
You know?
Yeah,
you know,
these guys have to be able to, you know, kind of freelance a little bit, too. I mean, you know, especially in Division III when you have 2 days to prep, you know, you have to be able to kind of get out of the box a little bit. If you're robots, then it's easy to scout and, you know, easy to defend. So, you know, yeah, I mean, if guys can improvise on the fly, that's great.
Coach, one thing I've not talked to you about is running 4v4s in practice. Are you a 4v4 guy? And is that the element where you kind of give the guys ability to freelance in the structure of a philosophy? I mean, if it's a drive and a clear out or a drive and a fill or whatever it is. We've never talked to you, really. We talked about 6v6, and I want to talk a little more about transition today, but are you running a lot of 4v4 stuff or 5v5 or 3v3s to encourage that freelance within a scheme? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. We don't do a ton of that with – we do kind of separate. Coach Wilkins will do some 4-on-4 stuff down at his end, you know, kind of skeleton work, or even he'll do it during shooting sometimes where they'll run, you know, just two-man games and they actually play kind of O versus D, but the defense are O guys. They're kind of switching back and forth. They run basically some skeleton shooting / 4-on-4 offense.
He makes
a little game out of it, and I think the guys benefit quite a bit from it. At our end, we'll do it with short stick D middies and poles, and we're more reffing out you know, slide packages or recovery type stuff. And it might be a 4-on-4, it might be a 5-on, it might be a 4-on-5, you know, 4 guys versus 5. We've been doing a lot more of that this year where, you know, maybe we'll put a guy behind at X, you know, with nobody on him, but the off-ball guys have to react if he gets the ball.
Interesting, man.
Yeah.
I don't think we've really... Hey, Jake, I got to tell you, man, in 115 hours, I don't think I've heard that before. Guys that are running I don't even know what the word is, kind of a semi-skeleton, if you're running it with your offense and offensive guys are just kind of in there giving them a defensive look, or the same on the defensive end with the D-middies. How long have you been doing that? Where'd you pick up on that?
I would have to say the 4-on-4 offensive stuff, probably Coach Wilkins probably got it from Bach, would be my guess.
Yeah.
The defensive stuff, it's just a way to kind of, and it's pretty common, I think. It's more just a way to get through your recovery stuff, and it's not really live play. It's more just to kind of rep through your slide and recovery process. And having an extra guy in there on the offensive side it gives you some different scenarios, whether it's a throwback up top and bump through the middle, or whether it's pushed behind X and the guys have to regroup and communicate through the next process. It's not live on our end. It's more live on coach's end, though. He does that 4-on-4 stuff is live at his end.
Again, does that culminate? I'm sorry.
Partly shooting, partly offensive philosophy, I guess.
Even on the defensive end, does that enter the shot sometimes?
No, it's not live. It's more just to get the guys moving, communicating, sliding recovery.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Coach, I've never, in the 2 hours we've spent together, we've never talked a lot about transition philosophies, and in terms of practice plans, not in terms of proprietary what you're doing or how you're doing it or, what your break looks like or your different breaks, your flats or your L's, whatever. But my question for you is, when we started this process 5 years ago, 90% of the guys were still in kind of a, what I might phrase a progression phrase, kind of 3v2 to 4v3 to 5v4. Then somewhere in year two and year three, they kind of did away with the even though they still run build-ups, don't get me wrong, it might be more, and when they were running progression, it was more of an add-one philosophy, if you will. I know Cottle was really big on that when we talked to him when he was in Maryland. But is there a philosophy that you had, or has it changed in terms of your transition? Do you start 2v1, 3v2? Do you go right into like a 5v4? Do you mix it up? Do you put it in different parts of the practice? I'm going to turn it over to you and give us a little bit on how the transition work actually works in your practice plan.
Yeah, at the beginning of the year, I think it's important to kind of stick to the basics. Get your 2v1s down, your 3v2s, and certainly your clean fast breaks and slow breaks. Nothing really out of the box, nothing where the guys have to necessarily think too much. They just have to, they know the drill. It's a 4-on-3. So we set up in a triangle and we, do our thing. It's really kind of set up for them. I think as the year progresses, I think it's important that once you feel like you've mastered that or at least gotten fairly good at it, you move on to some drills that, put guys in different scenarios and they have to actually read the situation and react. A clean build up, what's coming. It's, and a build up's another good one at the beginning of the year where okay, the first one's a 3v2, the next one's a 3v3, the next one's a 4v3, and, the build up, what's coming for the most part. We like to mix it up, especially during the season. We might do the, like 3v2 short field that I mentioned. We might do, we call it, one of our coaches, Devin Alves, we call it Alves transition. It's basically a 2-on-1 ground ball at the midfield. And if you pick it up, I think I mentioned this to you maybe on the last call. If the defensive guy picks it up, we add two on the other side, so it turns into a 6-on-5. If the group of two picks it up, it's a clean 54.
Right.
Or maybe it's a fast break. You don't know. Depends on how the ball falls. We also do, this one's my little fun drill. It's called Kuhn Unsettled. Very, very creative.
I love that name, man. We never.
Yeah, you must love that. It's really creative.
It's really.
It's basically, I just stand in the middle. I have a ball. I have somebody off to the side with a pile of balls. We start with a 3-on-3 ground ball with the middies, and they just go. They go, whoever picks it up, they go. Basically, the whole idea is we try to get a shot off in the first 10 to 15 seconds. If I blow a single whistle, we just turn and go the other direction. It might be off of a shot. It might be off of a missed pass. It might be just random. And then I'll just put a new ball in play wherever I want to put the new ball in play, and we go. So it really kind of creates some chaotic situations where guys have to kind of read each other and react. And I don't know. I think it's a great drill. I think at the beginning of the year it's really tough to kind of get into a flow. But as the year progresses and we get a little better in transition, I think it's a great drill to, for the guys to kind of just freelance, you know, and especially move off ball. We're really constantly talking about moving off ball and cutting off ball and moving the ball quick and making the extra look. And it creates a lot of different situations. And the new twist I put in recently, which you'll probably like, is if the goalie makes a save, they can outlet it up to me at the midfield and I get a clean, fast break the other way. So that's pretty fun.
All right, man. Let me ask you some questions so we can break this down. When you say 3v3 ground ball and you're in the middle, are you talking about at the midfield line, Coach?
Yeah, correct. It's a full field situation. You got one group of D and attack at one end, one group of D and attack at the other with a goalie, of course, and then your middies are basically coming from the box, you know, three on three. So it's really a full field situation. Whoever picks up the balls on offense and they go down, they try to get a quick shot off. If I feel like blowing the whistle, I blow the whistle. You know, I get them up and down usually about three, maybe four times. And then I double whistle and we get the next group going.
And I love it.
Yeah, it's you know, and it gets, to get up and down three times is.
Oh, man. It's
maybe four times. It's a pretty good little workout for the middies.
Love it. Love it. So the original ground ball was almost a ground ball rolled too with the 3v3 both coming out of the same sideline box. Kind
exactly.
Of.
Yeah, you got three guys coming at it. It can be a nice clean ground ball. Usually your fastest guys get there first or your pole or whatever. But that's really just to get the drill started.
You know what I do? I always roll the ball to the guy I like the most.
Yeah, I hear you. You can roll it to a side. You know, I mean, I like to get the guys to jump sometimes and, you know, they start going and then I don't roll it and then I re-roll it. So you kind of throw a few guys off.
Tricky coach.
Hey, you got to mix it up. It's my drill. I can do whatever I want. That's what I tell the guys.
I understand that. I mean, I can tell by the name, you know. So with Coach Mike unsettled, you probably have a different set of stipulations that you needed to go.
Yeah, maybe.
All right.
It'd be your drill. You can do whatever you want with it.
Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have any drills, but I mean, think with me like a high school coach here, okay?
Uh-huh.
If you've got a smaller roster, okay,
uh-huh.
It's not as effective, but you can certainly run this full field instead of running sprints at the end of practice if you like by putting two attackmen and two poles at each end if you don't have 40 guys.
Yeah, I think you could. I mean, it's certainly.
So, I mean, if you got a 26 man roster or something like that, you know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying, and you know, you certainly have to modify things when you have those situations. I mean, you don't want to run your guys into the ground, but yeah, I mean, it's certainly a good workout for the middies. And some drills, like when we do our progression drill, because it's so much running for the middies, what we do is we have our attack D and goalies touch the midfield. They touch the midfield line. So, you know, so after they clear the ball up, so say they start the drill and it's a clean, fast break. You just outlet it to the one middie. He goes, the attack, D, and goalie who just outletted it are going to go up to the midfield, touch it, and then have to get in the hole. So by then, the ball is probably coming back the other way, so you have to kind of get reset up. Your offense has to get set up, your defense has to get set up, and it's going to be a four-on-four situation. That's a whole different drill. So, you know,
but I love that twist, too.
Yeah, make sure attack and D run a little bit, you know, instead of just the middies all the time.
Yeah, and going back to the Coon unsettled drill, if you're coaching U13 or U15, I think you can still run this. I might move the cages not all the way to the restraining line, but like 15 yards in. You know, make it like a 75-yard or an 80-yard sprint if you're coaching U13 or U15 and run the same drill. And if you don't have the players, either make it 2v2 from the midfield box or two attack and two pulls at each end. So, you know, this happens. I get this all the time. JK says, oh, yeah, sure, man, that's a great drill of your RID. I got 22 guys out here, you know, and three of them never played before. Again, you know, we're huge proponents on the site of transition drills teaches kids to play, you know, because there's always somebody open. Inherently, they understand the philosophy is to move the ball. Johnny's not wailing on Billy, you know, because Johnny's 5'8 and Billy's 5'1 and all that kind of stuff. I love it.
Well, I think that drill is certainly an upper level drill. I mean, it's a lot of read and react. You've got to have guys that, you know, understand situations. You know, that's certainly a difficult drill. For those folks that have 26 guys or a group of guys who, you know, not all of them can pass and catch, I think you got to stick to the basics. I mean, you got to stick to those 4-on-3 situations where they know what they're doing. Then maybe, you know, build in a trailer or, you know, a trailing midi or, you know, build in a scenario that they have to actually start reading the play. You know, where like the Alves transition that I mentioned earlier where we have a 2-on-1 ground ball at the midline, similar idea. We have, you know, two black on one side with one white, and on the other side,
right,
you know, it's opposite, and it's a 2-on-1 ground ball, and then you go whatever direction it goes. That might be a little bit cleaner drill for a group that has less people.
No, I understand, and I agree. And, you know, one of the things you made so crystal clear in our other dialogues with you is, and I made a comment before, I think even in one of the articles I wrote about your drills, I think it's on my site, not Laxpower, I can't remember. You know, I want to be a team like RIT. I want to streak up and down the field. It isn't about streaking up and down the field. It's about understanding the basics, you know, and you certainly converted me in terms of spending a lot more time on angles from a couple of different places on the field. And, I mean, the fundamentals are the fundamentals. And it used to be kids would go to the camps in the summertime, as you pointed out before, and get a good focus from a credible source or a coach they looked up to or a team that they followed. You know, now they're playing summer ball and it's grip it and rip it, you know, and we could spend 2 hours just talking about the pros and cons of travel ball. You know, I've been a travel team coach, but I've become very jaundiced in the last couple of years, you know, about travel ball, and I don't even know if I'll do it this summer actually, coach. I mean,
yeah,
you know, you hear the parents on the sidelines with U15 kids screaming. And you know, I was in a bunch of tournaments, I think 3 times this summer, the sheriffs had to come to the field to take coaches and parents off. You're sitting there going, oh my God, what has happened to my game? You know, I mean, they're 15 for goodness sakes, you know, I mean, but anyway, that's the horse of a different color. Hey, one more question on the transition stuff. One of the things we've seen since 2013, coach, is a lot more work on, and different coaches have different vernacular. Do you like that? I used the word vernacular in a sentence.
Yeah.
I told you I studied for you, man. I mean, I understand this RIT. This is a whole new level. We call it crunching the field. And whether it would be, you know, forward, putting cones 10 yards in front of the cage or crunching, you know, Bates is big on putting cones down the middle and playing on one side or the other side, you know, really focusing on a right hand or a left hand, you know, set of work or toggling back and forth. Are you running those kind of crunch drills where you're having the guys play transition in a far smaller space?
I guess the two that we do are the 3v2 short field and we do a 4v3 short field, both very similar drills. I mean, in the 4v3 short field, you just have your three defensemen in and they go back and forth 3 times and then you have a new group in at the other end and it's just kind of continuous drill. Other than that, we don't really split the field down the middle. You know, when coach is working on his 4-on-4 stuff, I think it's set up that way. We don't necessarily have cones out there, but that's kind of how it's set up.
Okay.
Where the, you know, two guys are working on one side and two guys are working on the others, lefties and righties. So, you know, I think that's very similar to what you're talking about.
It's kind of like you said before. I mean, I think all this is the ever-increasing, and I love this, box influences in the field game now.
No question. And that certainly has influenced us. I mean, with the Canadians that we have, and Coach Wilkins being Canadian himself, I think certainly on the offensive side, that's evident here.
Yeah, we kind of an interesting one from Coach Colfer at Cabrini, where he put the you had to play 3v2 in the hash marks down to about 3 or 4 yards inside the restraining line, which kind of was a dual focus, getting the guys inside of that room and time or time and room, whatever, as well as moving the ball quickly in a 3v2, and each rep only lasts about 4 seconds or something. But Coach,
I'd have to take a look at that. I think he's just shrinking his face up then, and probably rolling the ball into different spaces. Yeah,
it's a
reminds me of a drill we're doing right now. We call it the Hopkins drill because we morphed it when we were at Hopkins over our spring break. We were having some trouble picking up a ground ball and, curling and getting your hands free and making a good pass. Guys wanted to kind of throw off their back foot and, getting passes batted down and whatnot. So, we went kind of old school and, we put a ground ball down. So we basically do it at two ends right now. So at one end, it gets set up however you want, the black defense and the white offense and the other end opposite. But, basically start with a ground ball, and you have two guys with their sticks over top of the ball. This is like third grade stuff. You have two guys with the sticks crossed over the ball, and then one guy will come through, and he's got to really scoop through the ball and get through all the traffic and come out with it clean. The two guys that have their sticks over the ball are told to try to double him right away off of the ground ball. And, so it's a two-on-one ground ball, but we also add two extra guys on offense, so it turns into a 3v2. And then it's played out as a 3v2. If the D guys put it on the ground and come up with it, then they got to play 2 versus 3 and try to score.
I'm sorry, I'm bright in here.
Yep.
I haven't seen that. We've talked to Coach, I think, 3 times, seen some similar stuff, but not that. The starting drills with sticks over the ball is something that I know Tierney runs a lot, Bill Tierney.
You want to know why? Because guys want to rake the ball all the time. They want to rake. Nobody wants to run through the ball anymore. Run through it. If you miss it, kick it out of the pile. It's basic stuff, and you watch college lacrosse, and, everyone wants to rake it out. And with that drill, you can't. You got to kind of – it's not a moving ball. It's a stationary ball. It's just gets you into the mentality of going through that pile and coming out the other side with the ball. And, this morphs into a 3v2, and we try to apply some pressure off the ground ball, so you've got to actually move and curl away. So what we were doing is we were doing
– Coach, where do you start that drill?
Right at the top of the box at both ends.
Okay.
Yep. So, you're going to each cage and, you have two groups and, it's a quick 3v2. The only problem is you only one ground ball. One guy gets a ground ball. That's the only issue with it. But we were doing it as a ground ball drill without the 3v2 part. So what we were doing is we were doing 2-on-2 ground balls, actually. One guy would run through, and we'd try to double-team the guy who picked up the ball, and he'd have to curl away and make a look, and then they'd have to get 2 passes and get it back. So we started it with a ground ball drill, and we're still doing it as a ground ball drill, but we morphed it into a 3v2.
I can't tell you. I love it. I can't wait to try it. Excellent. Yeah, I know Petro runs a lot of those he starts a lot of ground ball drills in the alley. That's the reason I asked you the question. Great stuff.
Interesting. I'm not opposed to that. Yeah, start it anywhere you want, really. Behind the cage is tough because then you have all the guys standing behind the net, but you can start it anywhere.
I think
you know, maybe 2 years ago on the site, Coach, you know, all of a sudden a lot more girls, coaches we were talking to were starting the out. And, you know, I think one of those proudest moments you ever have as a coach is you'll be standing on the bench, you know, the ball go down the alley, maybe we trap the guy by using good angles and getting our feet upfield, like they do with RIT. You know, on a clear, and we've got two sorties and a pole fighting for a ground ball in the alley. And, you know, then one of the guys that's standing on the bench next to you as a coach, you know, when this happens right in front of you, looks at you and goes, "Coach, that's our alley ground ball draw."
Yeah, right.
You know, and that's like almost as good as winning, you know, three games in a row or something, man. I mean, that's a light bulb moment, you know, when the kids realize that you're trying to put together drills that put them in a position to be successful, you know?
Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah, I hear you there.
Man,
yeah,
good
we
stuff.
Used to, at UMass, we do ground balls towards the sideline, and I thought that's good. We haven't done that as much here. I wish we probably should, where, you know, a lot of times ground balls are heading towards the sideline, and you've got to get the ball picked up and not run out of bounds and handle the pressure. It's not easy. You know,
well, I'll tell you something else that I've heard, and I'm trying to think, I think it was J.B. Clark. I'm not trying to name drop, Coach. I'm just trying to give the credit where the credit's due, you know.
Yeah, of course.
Was running, you might run a 3v2 or a 4v3, you know, off a ground ball, and whoever gets the ball's in the drill and the other guy's not at the drill or something like that. You know what I mean? And
right.
He was running a lot of that with his attack behind. It's a one-on-one ground ball with two attackmen in the corners or at X. And the thinking was that if we can get our attackmen to get four ground balls a game, that's going to give us at least two or three transition moments with our attack.
Yep.
And, you know, that's kind of funny. I took that and ran with it to a degree. And, you know, if you've got a team with, if you're a high school coach or a rec coach or a travel team coach, let's say you got four attackmen on your travel team or maybe five, and they're all good. I mean, number five is almost as good as number one, you know. We determine who starts the game by who had the most ground balls as an attackman in the previous game.
Nice.
You know, and
yeah, no, I think it's a great idea. We do something like that. We haven't done it in a while, though. It's kind of, you're kind of sparking some ideas here for me as well. What we do the same thing. We'd have four lines, two in the corners, two attackman lines in the corners. And then we'd have, what did we do? I want to say it was 4-on-4. And then we'd roll it to the attack. You could roll it to any line, really. And, whoever won the ground ball was in the drill. So it ends up a 4-on-3. The other guy was out. So it ends up a 4-on-3. So you kind of have to read it and react off ball. But yeah, it sounds like the same idea.
Well, and I just think it's so critical. I mean, if you, and, you know, the teams I've coached over the years have never been uber talented. So we got to win on throwing and catching, focusing on the fundamentals, banging the ball. But man, if we can turn our attackmen into ground ball mentality, like we do with our middies and like we do with our poles, I mean, it just kind of struck me a couple years ago. Or, I mean, you watch the pregames, you know, the poles are running three or four ground ball drills. Maybe the shorties are doing a, you know, a question mark, ground ball three sequence from the sideline or whatever. But man, once we started to, this happened to me at Auburn, you know, I had two post up attackmen. All they wanted to do was stand there and shoot. Both of them were 6'4", 220, one righty, one lefty. They were great. You know, and I kept telling them, you're 6'4". You know, my gosh, get the ground ball. And then we're in transition. And if you want to start, we're going to go with the guy that got the most ground balls. You know, understanding that I'm really not a big drop-off. You know, I mean, number four is as good as number two almost, you know.
Right,
if I had three guys that could play and three guys that couldn't throw and catch, my philosophy may be different. But
yeah, right.
Eight. One last question, and I'll let you go, because I know it's a busy day, and again, we're so just blessed and thankful that you're with us. This one you got to address, okay? I want to say the man up average, NCAA is in the 33 to 35 or 36, although over the years it seems to be creeping up. I see your man down is holding these folks to .287 year-to-date. Anything you're doing differently on your man down, Coach, or a different philosophy or a different focus that's contributing to that success?
Yeah, I think we're better than we have been on man down. We kind of just stuck with one thing, basically, instead of trying to switch some stuff up. You know, we're playing a little more of a W style versus a 2-3. We kind of read sets and react. We play a 3-3 one way, 23. We play a 1-3-2 a little different way. We're kind of in and out of a four-man and filling in certain spots. It's a little bit complex to talk about, but yeah, I think we're a little better than we have been. Really because we're just sticking with one philosophy. I mean, in the past we kind of weren't sure what we wanted to do and the guys weren't picking up on things. So we'd switch and, you know, we've gone with it. We've stayed with it and the guys I think are getting comfortable with it. And it's helping us.
Yeah, it was 1 year, man. I mean, I've had so many great soundbite moments doing this. It was 1 year, you know, and, you know, Bevel's a trip, man. And we were in, you know, interviewing Bevel, and it was about two-thirds way through the year. And I remember his man down was .110, okay?
Yeah.
And I asked him, man, what are the secrets? Okay, and there's, like, silence on the phone for, like, 10 or 15 seconds, you know, or 3 seconds. Seems like an eternity on the podcast.
That's right.
He goes, well, we mostly just cover the shooter.
Yeah, that's a great answer.
I mean, can't you just see him, you know, saying that? And he's talking in a condescending manner to me. Like, why? What's the big secret? You know, they got two guys that are scoring all the goals. We mostly just cover those guys. Okay. Next question.
There you go.
Next question.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me with him at all. He's, I'm sure he answered you seriously, too. Like, let's move on now. He's a great guy.
Yeah, I want to wrap this up because I know you got a game later today and everything or tomorrow, or was it today or tomorrow? Today, right?
We're playing today. Yep, 4:00 against Clark.
And we try and keep these timeless. You know, obviously, I'd be remiss if we didn't talk about the success you've had there. And I know you're getting great players, but I also think a lot of this is your persona, your communication style, your transparency, how much you care. Man, I'm just so impressed by you. And every time we publish something by you, or, you know, I get a question from coaches on emails, probably 30 a month, I can't tell you how much, you know, because most guys have a lot of offensive stuff but not much defensive stuff. And unfortunately, I think that's true on the site for us as well. We get overloaded on the offensive or the transition drills or those kind of looks. You know, I refer stuff back, and then I don't know if you know this, every December we run the kind of the Letterman top 10 list over the course of the three, because it's hard to get coaches to come on in December. You know, that's their family time before they ramp. And I understand that, you know, and it seems like so many guys in your generation, and I say that with love and respect, you know, started out as single guys or one young child. Now all of a sudden the guys in your genre of coaches have like kids that are 6 and 10, you know.
Right.
And this, you know, that family time all of a sudden is a new element in their life where maybe it wasn't quite as big 5 years ago, you know. And so, December we try and stay away from bringing coaches on. But anyway, you know, the angle drills are always in the top 10, even though they were back in 2013.
Cool.
Even this year in 2014 in December. So, man, thank you so much for everything. Give us a 30-second rundown. We try and keep these interviews timeless so you can always listen to them, but we're in May 1st of 2015. It's a great time if you are in the Northeast Corridor to consider sending your kids to the Tiger Lacrosse Camp July 13th through the 17th for all ages. Man, if I had a 15-year-old, I'd be sending them to your camp. Can you give us a 30-second overview of the camp, Coach, and we'll let you go.
Yeah, first of all, thanks for the time and all the positive comments there. But certainly it's not just me here. It's, you know, Coach Wilkins and Coach McKee and our volunteers. Great guys, great coaches. They're doing a fantastic job, and certainly I reap some of those benefits, so can't thank them enough. And they'll be here at camp. It's a great camp. It's a, you know, 4.5-day camp. It's a quality session to learn the basic fundamentals and wrap the basic fundamentals. We're going to have some fun for sure. You know, a lot of that stuff we talk about, a lot of the transition stuff, we like to get up and down the field a little bit, and I think it's important to make sure that young kids, you know, ages 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, I mean, all these young kids just focus on the basics and rep it out, but try to make it fun at the same time. And our staff does a real nice job of that at the camp, and you know, we're excited to have another great one this summer. We have a great pool too, with a couple high dives. The kids, it's really just a swimming and eating camp, just so you know. So
I want to know about the food, man. I want to know about the food.
Yeah, lacrosse is kind of just, you know, something we do during the day. The pool at the end of the day and the lunch is really, really where it's at for these kids. It's kind of a joke, but we do have those. We have a great dining hall. They do a great job for us, and the pool is awesome. They have a couple low dives and a couple 3-meter dives that the kids get a little crazy on. So good fun.
I have to tell you, man, you know, I'm 58, and, you know, I'm sure the players are a little different than they were, and you and I talked about that back in 2011. But at the end of the day, one of the biggest changes in college lacrosse is the quality of the food at these universities. Man, when I went to college, the food was not nearly as good as a pizza, even if you had to bounce a check to get it. That's
yeah.
Like a fixed check, you know?
Yeah.
And they would smile at you when they came to the door. Is the check going to go through? Oh, yeah, no problem, you know? You got four lacrosse players, $18 in their checking account between them.
The food's great for a 10-year-old when they just come in and eat ice cream and cereal for lunch.
I'm all over it, man.
No, we try to make them eat something before they get their ice cream, but it is available.
Oh, man. Hey, Coach, you are the greatest thing since sliced bread. Continued success. You're one of my favorites. You're one of the favorites that we have on the site. And your genuineness is just off the chart, and clearly your talent and your success the same. I know you got a brutal month coming up. There's so many great teams at D3 now. But I'm confident that you guys will get your just due and come home with that trophy. Without further ado, stay in line with me, Coach. This is Coach Mike, LaxCoachMike.com. We're going to let Coach go. Man, remember, you got such an awesome, awesome responsibility influencing the lives of these kids. Take it very, very seriously. Special thanks to our friends at Crossover who believe in the same things we believe in. And until next time, LaxCoachMike.com. God bless, everybody.